Next case, please.
Case number 10,900, Selco Partnership, DBA Verizon Wireless, east of Road 494, Dickerson Road, approximately 0.75 miles north of Road 501, St. George Road, and approximately 0.6 miles south of Route 24, a special use exception for a telecommunication tower.
Ladies and gentlemen, as Ms. Isaacs just announced, this is an application for a telecommunications tower, which typically generates a lot more interest here than most of the applications to the board. And what we typically do in these kind of instances is limit each side to presentations to 1 hour apiece. So all those in favor, in addition to the applicant itself, will have 1 hour to present the case. Anyone in opposition or those in opposition will be limited to that same time frame. So please keep your comments concise and try not to be repetitive. Okay, names and addresses, please. Just stay right here.
Andrew Peterson, 33rd and Water Creek Road, mm-hmm. Collegeville, Pennsylvania.
You all swear that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Thank you.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the board. John Tracy from Young Conaway, Stargett and Taylor here on behalf of the applicant Selco Partnership. With me and having already been sworn in is Andrew Peterson, who's our radio frequency engineer, Ken Farrell, who's our site engineer, Pam Bursler, who is our real estate professional, and Sue Manchel, our site acquisition specialist. You're familiar with all of these folks. They've accompanied with me here before, so I'm sure a lot of what you hear from them will not be terribly surprising. I think in a pleasant change of circumstances, most of the folks in the room here tonight are actually in support of this application as opposed to opposing it, but I don't want to speak too soon, so I'll wait and see what happens at the end. I'm also a little disappointed Mr. Crouch chose not to stick around for my usual Sterling presentations, but I'll take that out with him at the next DAPE meeting. Good evening. This application is for a new telecommunications monopole as well as the associated equipment shelter. The proposed height for this tower is 140 feet plus a 5 foot tall lightning rod. This is slightly smaller than the towers we've had before you previously. The site is approximately 2.5 miles southwest of the town of Laurel along Dickerson Road, about a half a mile to three quarters of a mile from its intersection with Horsey Church Road. The proposed tower will be lighted in accordance with the requirements of the Sussex County Code. We're seeking a special use exception because this property is zoned residential. It's AR1. It's greater than 1 acre in size, but because of the residential zoning, it requires the special use exception. As you can see from the aerial photograph, which we handed out to you, as well as what's on the board here, you can see that it's in a decidedly rural area. In fact, you'll note that the closest residential structure to the proposed tower is approximately 2,200 feet away. As the board is aware, we are the holder of an FCC license, which gives us the right, privilege, and obligation to provide reliable cellular coverage to our subscribers. Per the terms of the license, Verizon Wireless is required to provide reliable service within its licensed area or potentially risk losing its license. As you all have heard me say before, as cell phone technology is expanded, it's no longer something that's utilized by the privileged few, but it's now usually we'll find most of our homes have about as many cell phones as there are people living in the homes. What we found is not only are they used in cars with, of course, Bluetooth technology appropriately being utilized, but they're now being used in all walks of life and often in replacement of the actual landline. In fact, I think, as I've said to this board before, I would love to ditch my landline and the $65 a month in terms of using my cell phone, which I also pay roughly $65 a month, but I have no cell coverage at my house. How ironic is that? But what you've also seen is with the advent of all the technologies, particularly the data, the downloading, the emails, and things of that nature, that that further taxes the services. When this happens, we find gaps in coverage, the dreaded can you hear me now effect, and we have to set about finding ways to address this. Our preferred method, of course, is to co-locate on existing structures because that is substantially less expensive than constructing new structures. However, as you've seen in the times I've been here in the past, that is not always the case, and obviously I would not be standing before you tonight if that was not the case in this instance. With that, what I would like to do is bring up Andrew Peterson, our RF engineer, and have him go through the need for this particular location. I believe you all did receive copies of his reports with all the materials. So.
Yes, we did. Thank you.
If you could go ahead and state your name and occupation for the board.
Andrew Peterson, radio frequency engineer.
And are you the RF engineer who was tasked with analyzing the coverage in this area?
I am, yes.
Okay. And for the board's information, how does Verizon Wireless determine that more coverage is necessary in a particular area?
Through the use of network statistics, computer modeling, drive test data, and customer complaints, Verizon Wireless will identify areas that are lacking in terms of coverage or capacity. Both of those are key components of service, and in this case, deficiency was noticed in both coverage and capacity, and that's the nature of this application, is to address kind of the dual purposes here, which are the coverage along Sharptown Road, southwest of Laurel, and capacity in Laurel.
Obviously, when we discover these gaps in coverages, search rings are generated to determine where to look for a particular location. Could you explain to the board the significance of the search ring and what happens if the proposed site falls outside of those search rings?
Sure. A search ring is issued, which gives general direction to a site acquisition specialist who will then take that direction in the form of a geographical map with usually a ring-shaped area identified that will work from a radio frequency perspective. And the site acquisition specialist will then attempt to find a property there that's, well, first they'll attempt to use existing tall structures to satisfy the need. If that fails, as was the case here, they'll then attempt to find a piece of property that's not only leasable, but also from a zoning standpoint, an acceptable candidate to build a new facility upon.
You said work from an RF perspective. What does that mean?
All right, well, if the property that's brought back deviates too greatly from the search ring direction as far as location, it will hamper its ability to work in the network, because location is important, along with height, but location is certainly a very important aspect when it comes to site design as far as the site's footprint fitting into the grid and meeting the design objectives for the site.
With regard to the site that's before the board this evening, can you explain to the board what intended purposes this location is designed to cover, to handle?
Sure. I mentioned earlier it's really for two objectives, coverage and capacity. The coverage objective is to address a gap along Sharptown Road southwest of Laurel and the surrounding areas. And the capacity issue that it will address is the growing capacity and the projected outstripping of existing capacity in Laurel and around Laurel. As was mentioned earlier by the attorney, there's an unprecedented growth in data use out there, spurred by smartphones and Verizon Wireless and the other carriers, commercial wireless providers, are having a difficult time dealing with it. They've already maxed out the existing facilities as far as the equipment. There are some limiting factors when it comes to radio frequency spectrum. So the solution in this case, as in many cases, is it necessitates a new site to deal with the capacity. In addition to that, there is the coverage component.
Okay, and you have with you propagation maps to discuss with the board, correct?
I do.
Why don't we deal with the one that you have up there? If you could walk the board through what that propagation map shows.
Sure. Illustrated with black triangles that surround the periphery of the exhibit are the Verizon Wireless existing facilities that
are currently on air today serving customers.
Excuse me, Mr. Peterson, would you mind using this? We've been having difficulty getting people on tape.
You're not going to sing, are you?
Promise I won't sing. I'll go back. The black triangles that dot the periphery of the exhibit, they represent the existing Verizon Wireless on-air facilities. They comprise the network around Laurel, and they are on-air today serving customers. The red dot, kind of central to the exhibit, is the location of the proposed facility. And the blue shading represents the existing on-air, reliable service geography that the current sites are providing. And you'll notice that there is an absence of that blue shading surrounding the proposed facility, and that would indicate unreliable areas of service.
Now, one of the things that we've discussed previously with the board deals with the I guess for lack of a better word, the shrinking footprint coverage that can exist where coverage is in fact shown to exist on the map. Can you kind of walk the board through what is meant by the coverage footprint shrinking during a given day or during given times?
Sure. It's commonly referred to as cell breathing in the industry, and what happens is as the sites load up during rush hour or any other busy hour during the day, the noise floor is elevated, and what's important in the communication channels, that signal to noise ratio. So as the noise floor elevates, the signal too must elevate with it in order to ensure quality channel for the mobile phone to operate on. In this case, the signal is what it is as you travel away from the facility. That signal isn't going to increase, so you're stuck with this noise floor that's elevating. So it serves to decrease that signal to noise ratio and in effect shrinks the coverage footprint of the site. So what I'm illustrating here are normal conditions, you know, unloaded conditions, and these coverage footprints will actually shrink during a busy hour. So this paints a rosier picture than maybe what's really out there during a busy hour.
Prior to deciding that a new tower needed to be constructed in this area, I presume that Verizon Wireless went through the exercise of, for instance, increasing signal strengths and doing things of that nature?
That's correct. Each of the existing facilities is leveraged to its full capability as far as not only the equipment that's in the facility to try to serve more customers to meet the capacity demand, but also antenna types and azimuths, down tilts and different power levels and things of that nature have already been exhausted in order to increase footprint.
Okay, now the one of the requirements of the ordinance is we have to also rule out any structures that are located within a 2-mile radius of this particular property. And if my memory serves, we have two locations that are approximately a mile and a half, a mile and 6/10 that lie to the northeast of this site. Would either of those two locations work to address the coverage gap in this instance?
No, neither would address the coverage gap. They are, as you said, roughly a mile and a half or more to the northeast towards 13 and towards Laurel. Being a mile and a half to the northeast, their effective coverage footprint would also be a mile and a half to the northeast of what's being proposed, which would leave a gap along Sharptown Road as you had southwest away from Laurel, which is, as I mentioned, one of the coverage or the coverage objective of the facility. So from a coverage standpoint, they're not very useful.
One other issue is I would presume locating this thing a mile and a half or so to the northeast would then provide overlapping coverages in the areas where Tower 277 and I think that's Tower 85, their coverage footprints are as well, correct?
Right. Predominantly the overlap would be with Tower 277, and it would be too much overlap. The cell spacing, you can see from what's out there, is somewhat consistent, and the proposed fits into that puzzle, if you will, very nicely. Having the facility a mile and a half northeast will push it very close, relatively speaking, to site 277. Too much overlap, and
radio frequency design, too much overlap is not a good thing. Causes unnecessary overhead, which taxes the system resources. So it's a far inferior candidate than what's preferred.
In a nutshell, that would, you're talking about overlap. Is that interference causing coverage issues, causing reliability issues where you have the redundant coverages?
It's not so much interference, but the exaggerated overlap in coverage will cause a mobile subscriber that's in that area of overlap to ping pong basically between the two sites. They'll fight almost to serve that subscriber, which adds overhead handshaking and signaling traffic that's really not necessary for the network. There are certain things you can do to minimize that, but there's nothing better that you can do than separating the sites at an appropriate distance, and that's what we're doing.
Could you flip over to the next map, which I believe is what the proposed coverage would look like? Could you walk the board through that exhibit?
We've changed the existing coverage in this case to a purple shade. The footprint hasn't changed of the existing coverage, and we've simply added this layer of blue, which is the proposed reliable coverage area of the subject facility.
Okay. And is it correct that this new tower would provide greater in-building and in-vehicle coverage in this particular area?
It would.
And it would also address the existing and anticipated capacity concerns in the Laurel area?
It would.
Okay. And would this new tower provide opportunity for co-location?
Yes, it would.
Okay. You've also determined that there is no airport interference with this tower as proposed, correct?
That's correct.
And we actually did receive a FAA sign-off letter at the proposed height.
Yes, we did. We received a determination of no hazard to air navigation dated 8/31 of this year.
Do you have an extra copy of that?
I do.
Could you submit that to Ms. Isaac so we have a copy of that in the record? I don't think it was submitted to you previously. And it's correct that this tower will be lighted in accordance with the Sussex County ordinance as well?
Correct.
Okay. And even though, correct me if I'm wrong, the FAA did not place a lighting requirement on it, but the ordinance does?
That's correct.
Okay. Lastly, as we've done in the past, you also prepared a report for the board that estimates the emissions output. As the board has heard from prior hearings, there's particular grounds that local boards are not allowed to troll into as long as we're demonstrating compliance with the minimum standards. The health effects argument that we hear is one of them. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that our emissions are approximately 830 times lower than the FCC minimums on the site.
That's correct.
Okay, if you could walk the board for the record through what that means.
Sure. The FCC regulates exposure from these facilities. And in this case, under some upper limit assumptions, including maximum traffic loading, antenna down tilt, 24/7 duty cycle, or I should say lack of duty cycle, on all the time, 7 days a week, 365, it's anticipated that the levels will be at least 830 times below what the FCC considers safe.
Okay, thank you. I have no further questions for Mr. Peterson unless the board does.
Are there any questions from members of the board for Mr. Peterson?
How far are you from the airport?
I believe that's in the FAA letter, which I submitted. But I can estimate.
We're several miles away, Mr. Workman, and that's partly why the tower's at 140 feet instead of 145 feet.
I'm sorry, we're actually right around a mile.
About a mile, okay.
About a mile away from it.
Okay, a mile puts us right kind of into the middle of the longer of the runways. And that's why it was necessary to submit to the FAA for what they call an extended study. Or a specialist at the FAA will actually examine what's being proposed and say, sure, you could build something there. However, you can't have it any higher at its tip than, in this case, 145 feet.
Okay.
Right.
So it's 140 plus the 5-foot lightning rod.
Lightning rod, yeah.
Yeah, that's what gets you to the 145. Further questions for Mr. Peterson?
No, sir. None at this time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I don't think we need that until Ken comes back.
Yeah, or just set it on that bench over there.
It's going to tempt me, you know, to go into the wedding singer.
Yeah, mode. Avoid the karaoke.
Yes,
they have a kill switch.
Just like my wife does. Kidding. Kidding. Next, I would call Pam Bursler, but before doing that, I've handed up a copy of her report. Pam is our real estate appraiser who assesses the impacts of these locations. Neighboring property values. I think the board will recall that her testimony in the past has shown that once you get roughly 300 to 400 feet away, there really is no impact on property values. In this instance, the closest residential structure is over 2,200 feet away, obviously well outside of that point where there's no impact. So I think what I would do is I would offer Ms. Bursler for the board to ask her any questions short of bringing her up to testify, unless the board would like me to have her come up and actually testify in this instance. Okay, she's certainly available for any questions if any questions come up. Again, what I would like to do is call Mr. Farrell, Ken Farrell, who's our site engineer. No singing. We've been banned.
How you doing? I'm Kenneth Farrell, Manager Engineering Services for CMC Engineering, and I have obviously testified in this case.
Ken, if you could explain to the board what your involvement in this project has been.
We prepared the site plans for this site, Dogwood Acres, as Verizon's calling it.
Okay. Did you generate the site? Did your office generate the site plan that we're showing the board this evening?
Yes.
Okay. If you could flip over to the page that actually shows the site plan in more closer detail, and if you could walk the board through the structures that site plan shows.
Sure. Let me refer to S1 first. S1 is the entire property itself. We're going in the upper northwest corner of the property. Obviously, you can see the dashed circular line, which is the wheels of the irrigation system, and then the irrigation system throws the water approximately 180 feet past that. I'm going to flip to sheet S2. And sheet S2 gives you a flavor of what we're proposing. Currently, as designed, it meets the setbacks of the ordinance. We're proposing along Dickerson Road. Our tower is going to be approximately 80 feet from the edge of road. We're going to be the 50-foot setback from the side property line. And again, similar to what Verizon has done, it's a 50 by 50 compound with an access road coming off of Dickerson Road. And currently there's no utility poles in front of the site, but there is further down Dickerson Road, and there'll be utilities brought in along Dickerson Road from the power company and the phone company.
And it's correct that you prepared the, actually, we'll come back to that. It's correct that this is an actively farmed parcel, as you talked about?
Yes, it is.
In fact, it's located in the middle of a number of actively farmed parcels?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And you did the overhead exhibit that I'd showed the board previously that placed the nearest structure at approximately 2,259 feet?
That is correct. With this exhibit right here, Z1, as we're calling it.
Okay. And the balance of the structures are over 3,000 feet away, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. How many antennas are proposed for this tower?
Generally, Verizon proposes 4 to 5 antennas, obviously depending on configurations and what they're trying to achieve with the site. Typically, it is 4 antennas.
Okay, and it's designed, the tower itself is designed to accommodate at least 2 other carriers?
It is, that's correct.
Okay. It's designed to have the warning lights every 50 feet?
It will be constructed with the warning lights per the ordinance, yes.
Okay, and then what does the equipment shelter itself hold?
Again, it's the standard equipment shelter. It's 30 feet wide. 20 feet of it is the actual mechanical computer equipment that routes the phone calls. The additional 10 feet of it is the emergency generator. So the emergency generator is housed within the building, just like the previous other sites that we have been before the county here.
Okay. We've also evaluated the tower from a structural standpoint, correct?
That is correct.
And in fact, I just your office generated a letter dated November 23rd, 2011?
That is correct.
Okay, if you could just walk the board briefly through that.
Basically, this is a letter that was penned by Mr. Joel DeFreitas from our office. He's a structural engineer. And basically, this letter states that the tower will be designed in accordance with the EIA TIA 222G standards, which is the standards that govern these types of structures. So it will be designed in accordance with the industry standards.
And again, this is an industry standard that prevents the tower from falling over, for lack of a better word, like
correct.
A bowling pin, but
right.
to have hinges to collapse in that
fashion.
That's
right. They don't fall like a tree or a bowling pin. They kind of collapse upon themselves. As the wind shear would stop, it would collapse to a point where it would stop, but it doesn't fall over like a bowling pin.
Okay, and it's correct that we obviously are choosing this location for several reasons. One, of course, is it addresses our coverage needs. Two, we try to find properties where there's minimal impact on surrounding neighbors. But three, anything more directly to what you're doing in terms of the design of the compound, we also try to design these in such a way as to have minimal impact on farming operations or the existing uses of the property, correct?
That is correct. And like I had said earlier, if we were to push it, further in, obviously we have the irrigation system that we have to worry about and contend with, and we're trying to, match the cellular need with the farming need and everything, and that's why we have the best site that fits within the ordinance that you have for it.
Okay. I don't have any further questions for Mr. Farrell, unless the board does.
And any members of the board, Mr. McGabe? Do you have any questions for Mr. Farrell?
Can I sing now?
Yes, sir. Please do.
See, you bought it, Al.
Mm-hmm. Take this away before I get in more trouble.
There you go. I did receive one letter today. I don't know whether you had received it or not, from Vincent Farms. So I'm just going to read it briefly into the record and hand it up. It says, as a property owner of farmland near the proposed site of the cell tower on Dickinson Road, I would like to express my support for the project. During the course of business, we rely heavily on cell phones to keep in contact with our employees. In that area of the county, we experience limited availability of service. We farm a substantial amount of land in the area, and improved cell phone service would be a significant advantage to our operation. As businesses continue to adapt new wireless technology, cell phone service becomes more of a necessity than a luxury. Two examples come to mind. One is the fact that auto-steer tractors now use cell phone signals for guidance applications. Another example is the increased use of mobile email. I receive most of my produce orders via email. Comprehensive cell phone service is of huge importance so that I can read those emails while in the field and then be in timely contact with my customers. This is from Raymond T. Vincent Jr. of Vincent Farms. That's the extent of my presentation this evening. I'm sure you'll be relieved to know. As this board is heard me frequently in the past, the standard that we are bound by is that this application will not substantially affect adversely the uses of adjacent and neighboring properties. As we've discussed previously, that word substantially is not included by accident. It's in fact deliberately included in a statutory construction cases would tell us that we have to give that word substantially its normal and due course. In this instance, I would argue that there's no adverse impact, much less a substantial adverse impact. We're continuing to do our best to find locations that are not butting up against residential properties. As you know, it's not always possible, but this was an instance where we found a property and a property owner that was willing to accommodate this tower that places us very far away from any residential properties. These things don't make any noise. They don't elicit any smells. They don't tax county resources other than the building permit revenues generated from having to construct it. It does not also substantially interfere with the property owner's use of the property by staying outside of the irrigation circle. And in fact, I believe the same property owner also farms the property immediately to the north. I don't believe they own the parcel, but they farm the parcel. So we'd like to do our best to stay out of those operations. So unless you have any more questions for me or any of my team, I'll allow others to speak.
Okay, are there any further questions from any member of the board, Mr. McKay? Mr. Workman? Mr. Hudson? Mr. Mills?
No.
Not at this time, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, are there any persons here that are in favor of this application? Could you please keep your hands up? One, three. Okay, is there anyone here in opposition to this application? Chair, hearing none?
We did publish this and notify everybody.
Wow.
It's got to be a first.
Again, chair, hearing none?
That's a sign of a weak signal.
I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I think we've heard significant and sufficient testimony that would suggest that the request would not substantially affect adversely the uses of neighboring adjacent properties, and we have not heard any testimony that like otherwise, so I'd make a motion that we approve case number 10,900.
Do I have a second to that motion?
Second.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Mills, a second by Mr. Hudson, that we approve case number 10,900. All those in favor of the motion, give the usual voting sign.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carried. Your case is approved.
Mr. Chairman, I guess the next question would be, how soon will it be built?
Yeah, how soon now will it be built? Man. I can't believe that. That's got to be the first.
That's my house.
Huh?
That's for my house.
Yeah, that's the first.
Amazing. Terrible.
Amazing. Yeah. No? None of your house at all. Didn't that sound? That'll be good then.
That'd be good. I just got back from vacation. I'm tired.
I'll let these on. Oh, I'm sorry.
I watch them. They lose. So I may just.
Board issue, Board of Adjustment issues. Oh, okay. Here we go again on this one. Gentlemen, here we go. Okay, gentlemen, that's all the old. Yes, that will be.
Everybody going home.
Yeah. I'm going to wait till they get out. Yelling. Okay, members of the board, we got three other issues to, I guess, the first thing I've got is the schedule for next year. Did everyone get a chance to look it over? Because they told that, that we did, you know, everything's fine, everybody had a chance. We're just going to let her know that, go ahead and go with it.
What?
The schedule for next year's meetings. Did everyone look at it and everything okay? So we could let Susan know. Okay, that was okay. Then the next one was the case that we was going to bring up for discussion, was it? The one, what was that one? Was it down there to the...
Oh, Del Rossi. And Lily. We have it on for next agenda.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's on the next agenda.
Okay. Those are the last of the Bay City cases.
That's
that
the
we
word.
Heard.
Thank you.
Good, I can get rid of that paperwork.
And
you might want to help us on that or whatever.
Yeah, did I send something to be sent out to the board on those? No.
No.
Okay. When's that one coming up? Next meeting?
The next meeting.
December 12th.
December 12th.
I'll have something for you. I'll get something out to you before then.
Yeah, well Susan and Jesse called me about it. And, you know,
because they've been
bringing it up, let us know for
well over a year.
And you was going to put it on the next.
And I
am I correct?
It's on there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I just want to let the board know. And
okay. I'll give you a little history on what's happened
it's been a
since
while.
Then. Yeah.
Yeah, and I know. I've fell asleep since then. I don't know about anybody else, but okay. And then next we got this, everyone get this sheet here that Susan just handed out?
I've already taken a course like this. In fact, I think I've taken two.
Thursday, December the 1st.
It was given to Lawrence from administration, and he just wanted to...
No, the other one they had what, they could have got, was it CDs or something? That
we
last
took,
course that we had took.
We took it at Dover. We took it at Dell Tech.
Yeah.
They took one up there, Dover, right there to the, what was that building up there, Dover, took it at? The Beacon, or the Bacon? Huh? Party Center, yeah, we took one Party Center.
And as I recall, it had the same agenda, same information.
Do we need to do this, Susan? Is that Lawrence think we should do?
It's gonna be up to you, if you wanna take it or not. Just letting you know, the class is available if you wanna.
And it's Thursday, the?
Next Thursday.
Next Thursday?
Yeah, kinda short notice.
Well, the deadline is.
Yeah, unless somebody suggests that, otherwise, I don't know that.
The deadline is Thursday.
I need it, and I'm speaking for myself, but probably for the rest of you that have already taken, we've already taken. I know.
Two classes.
Ron and Dale and I have taken two classes, yeah.
Yeah.
I only took one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we came on, but we had taken one before. Yeah, before you came on, though. Yeah.
And it was.
And it looks like it's the exact same.
Same thing.
Yeah, honestly, this one here is the one that we, yeah, that Ron and John and I took. We went up together, matter of fact, or met up there.
It's why.
Took off from work, yeah.
It's why we act more professionally than town boards. No.
Yeah, you got arrested by what, Friday? No.
What?
Says the deadline's November 24th.
Which is Thursday.
Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. Yeah, you got arrested before then.
Or Friday. What is it? Let's see.
Yeah. It's 21st. You got to do it on Wednesday. Well, yeah.
Yep.
Hey, well, we appreciate this.
Mm-hmm. Just letting you know it's there if you want to.
Yeah, well, I certainly do appreciate it. Okay, is there anything else, Susan, from the office, anything we need to know or to do?
No.
Okay.
I think the only thing that was pending in our files was the Del Rossi
and that's going to be taken care of.
And then Harmon, we did receive a survey. It was left open for a survey.
Right.
But I had to call. It's not what we needed, so they're redoing it. So hopefully we'll get it on next month sometime.
Okay. All right, then. And well, if that's everything.
Should I ask if the county's out of money?
Huh? Well, I wish everyone have a happy Thanksgiving. Have a nice one. And see everybody then on December the 12th. Okay, there being nothing else, the board will be open.
Motion to adjourn.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Meeting is adjourned, subject to call.